Welcome to the 8 o'clock edition, or 8 p.m., or actually 9 p.m. Central Time, the edition of American Exposé that I do on Wednesday night. So we do this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 9 p.m. Central Time. Spread the word, listeners, as the need for documentation and information is most perilous right now, most important and most imperative. And certainly Dennis the Menace has been busy today. I see here, once I covered with Hansa at the 7 p.m. Central Time slot, dated today, July 6th, a regional alliance led by China and Russia called Tuesday for the U.S. and its coalition allies in Afghanistan to set a date for withdrawing from several states in Central Asia, reflecting growing unease at America's military presence in the region. Now, keep in mind, the UN considers countries states, and this information from the Associated Press considers countries states. So when you hear state, it's actually a country. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which groups Russia, China, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan, urged a deadline set for withdrawal of foreign forces from its member states. And I cover that with Hansa. When I look at the perestroika deception, we see here under the title of author's note, U.S. policy for dealing with North Korean, well, let's see if we can connect this dot with this information from the perestroika deception. Apparently it was written in March of 1989. Under the title of author's note, cooperate with us or face the prospect of nuclear chaos and conflict. The developing situation over North Korea should be carefully watched with this in mind. Keep in mind, I just covered something from a different prospect. The late Kim Il-sung was a Soviet Korean. The North Koreans would not have acted in a provocative manner without the concealed support of the Russians and their Chinese comrades in arms from the 1950s. In a different context, the Russians may be expected to provoke an incident unattributable to themselves involving the explosion of a nuclear device somewhere in the West, not excluding the United States. The purpose would be to reassert or reemphasize the necessity for the American-Russian partnership now and to create pressure for eventual world government. U.S. policy for dealing with the North Korean crisis is inadequate because it focuses on North Korea in isolation as a rogue state and naively seeks help from the Russians and Chinese to solve the problem. The North Korean situation and any future nuclear incident, wherever it occurs, must be seen against the background of Sino-Soviet convergence strategy. The interaction of Russian and Chinese policy and the moves they make to derive strategic gains from critical situations should be closely studied. And this is my concern all the time about what we live today. And, oh, man, for people to be so weak and so dumbed down, it's just beyond me. Regarding this G8 situation, this individual, apparently it's Karen Wheatlaw, coming from BBC. It's a rather nervous day in Ochterter. When we first heard the G8 summit was coming to Glen Eagles, our initial reaction was, why here? For security purposes, surely a cruise ship in the middle of the Atlantic would be a safer option? Obviously not. So on our doorstep, it has to be. After weeks of apprehension, it's day one of the summit. The frequent buzz of helicopters can be heard overhead as the G8 leaders fly into Glen Eagles. As I entered the shop, and evidently this person is the owner of a shop, a store, just after 9 a.m., there were 8 protesters, each wearing masks showing the faces of the world leaders attending the G8 summit. They were standing, chatting, and certainly didn't appear ready to cause trouble. But what I can't help thinking is, will it remain like this throughout the day? The police have been great, and they have kept us well informed so far, and I believe they are doing a damn good job. One thing we had hoped not to do was board up the windows at the front of the shop, but we felt we had to do this morning in order to feel secure. We are in an antique shop, and we have a lot of valuable items which we don't want to be damaged. However, the premises remain open, but if we have to put the closed sign on the door and pull down the shutter, we will. From the 7-year-old son's point of view, my 7-year-old son's point of view, one good thing from the uncertainty of the day is that I decided not to send him to school. He attends prep school outside Ochterter, and while I was pretty certain I could get him there okay, I was worried about getting him home. My son was delighted by this stroke of luck because he's got out of doing a 2-minute talk to his class on the subject of goldfish. Well, the big event is here, and we've just got to get on with daily life as best we can. Let's hope that Glen Eagles, along with Ochterter, escapes unscathed, and the thousands of people visiting the area, be it the G8 entourage or media, spend a few pounds in the local shops. Apparently, this is a big thing for them over there. And what is the G8? The G8 includes Russia. What are they doing? What are they talking about? What is their plan? What is the plan of the G8? What is the plan of the Bilderberg Organization? What are the plan of the Council on Foreign Relations implementing directions in this country? And according to Barry Shamish, in Israel, the Council on Foreign Relations is very involved in Israel as well. So, understanding this is most important, that we really don't know the direction things have turned and what is the big problem in this situation to bring it all into place. I'm certainly rather upset with what's going on in Asia, in Southeast Asia. And most people don't even have a clue. As I covered that article from the American Free Press about the Hmong people in Laos finally capitulating to communism, well, I see here in the paper, and it's dated July 6th today, a little snippet, and listen carefully to this. From Thailand, soaked by rain, thousands of poor ethnic Hmong refugees from Laos were living without shelter in northern Thailand on Tuesday, forced from their homes under a Thai campaign to pressure them to return to their native land. So Thailand is not a country that was anti-communist at all. They want the people from the Hmong group to move back to their home area in Laos to capitulate to communism. Now, communism in Vietnam has been very tyrannical. Communism had the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, whoever you want to call them, had bloodbaths purging the population of anyone that wore a wristwatch, for that matter. Anyone that wore a wristwatch was immediately killed in 1975 when the communists finally took South Vietnam. And that was reported to me by various sources back then when I was concerned. Regarding the G8 summit, anti-G8 march scaled back after violence flares. And it was scaled back by police and organizers only hours before it was due to begin after violence flared overnight in the nearby town of Sterling. At least 5,000 protesters were expected at Wednesday's lunchtime march, but Tayside police said at 11:30 a.m. that they were urging people not to come and were turning coaches back. Later, the police said that they would allow a crowd of about 1,500 who had already gathered at the nearby town of Ach Trotter, the nearest town of Glen Eagles, to march, so long as it was peaceful. Tayside police said the main march had been canceled on the grounds of public safety and because the disruption to the road network in the area and the level of criminal activity. Tina Morrell, a student for the G8 Alternatives Campaign Group, said, quote, "I think it's horrible. Everything was very well organized. It's a peaceful demonstration. They should just let us march," end quote. Goes on to state that hire buses laid on by the group have been stopped at several police checkpoints and some roads were blocked off. Earlier, hundreds of protesters had clashed with riot police and attacked shops and other businesses ahead of the G8 summit, which begins later on Wednesday. The violence saw running battles being fought with police as groups of demonstrators smashed cars with iron bars and hurled bricks through the windows of a Burger King. Around 200 protesters dressed in hooded tops with scarves obscuring their faces hurled missiles at police officers and barricaded roads. There was major traffic disruption on the M9, which is the main link road between the central belt of the country and the northern passes, Glen Eagles. A group of protesters could be seen laying on the road surrounded by police. Trouble erupted in Sterling in the early hours of the morning as protesters began moving from an echo camp where they had been based for the last week. Now, once again, I was asking Hans the last hour that, or he made a statement on his website, that all demonstrations were communist and Soviet inspired during the 1960s, during the Vietnam conflict. Could that be the case today at this point in time? Could it be the Hegelian dialectic moving along in its own mannerisms to create the ultimate end goal of what they want to create? And what is it, a police state, a world police state under the UN domination? In the meantime, Russia and China are allied. Russia is having strategic partnerships with Mexico. China is in the middle of conflicts in this country when they want to buy out Unocal. And so you can't help but be concerned if you're awake in any kind of mannerism at all, being awake and aware. On June 23, 2005, announcement by China's largest state-owned company, China National Offshore Oil Corporation, CNOOC, of an unsolicited bid for Unocal, a California-based United States oil company, and ninth in U.S. oil production, has been received with considerable reservations. It is that which is not known about the bid and its motivations which present a tremendous task ahead for the U.S. Congress and Wall Street, a communist country wishing to embed itself in the U.S. economy with ramifications tied to national security is unprecedented, along with it actually being taken seriously by the U.S. government. And this is where I interject the thought of infiltration of known communists in our government and trained at a young age to be communist. In April 2005, Unocrel agreed to a $16.4 billion merger with U.S.-owned Chevron Corporation. And who owns Chevron Corporation, people? Rockefeller. It's one of the largest oil companies in the world. On the heels of the merger comes CNOOC, hoping to break up that deal with a $20 billion oil cash bid. CNOOC bid follows the June 2005 Chinese takeover bid for the Maytag Corporation by Hair America Trading, a unit of China's Hair Group. Competing with the Hair Group is their $1.3 billion bid as Ripplewood Holdings, managed out of New York with production facilities in Newton, Iowa. Unlike the Maytag bid, however, CNOOC, quote, raises questions about how much of the country we are willing to sell to a communist country that we might be fighting someday, end quote, said Michael O'Hanlon, an international military specialist at the Brookings Institution. For years, the U.S. government has had restrictions placed upon ownership of industries such as airlines, the media, and military contractors, although China is now a subcontractor for many U.S. military weapons manufacturers. But never has the U.S. government entertained outside ownership of U.S. assets by a communist regime, which continues to build up its military arsenal as its economy has grown tenfold over the past decade. And in order to assume the continual growth of its manufacturing base, largely from the U.S. and the West, China needs oil. Second only to U.S. in consumption of energy, China now is the fastest growing consumer of oil. Of importance is that more than half of Unocal's reserves are concentrated in Southeast Asia and has a pipeline hooked up to strategic American oil reserves as well as a rare earth mine, which remains only the one in the U.S., William A. Reinseth, president of the National Foreign Trade Council, states, quote, when you talk about energy supplies and the market is tight, there's a national security issue, end quote. Yet the U.S. government has an interest in publicly quieting talk about the threat of China, both militarily and technologically, which go hand in hand in threatening U.S. competitiveness. And unlike the U.S., China does not distinguish between civilian and military development, as profits for both go into supporting the Chinese communist state. Not too long ago, there was much scrutiny and debate about whether the International Olympic Committee should award Beijing as host of the 2008 Summer Olympics due to China's continued practice of human rights violations, including slave labor conditions for its people. The Chinese somehow have that covered too, making this whole bidding process not much, or not such a long shot, but a well-orchestrated campaign, largely with the help of U.S. government insiders and corporate entities lending a willing hand. Earlier this year, International Business Machines Corporation, IBM, was sold to Lenovo Group of China, which met with disapproval from Congress. As a direct result, IBM sought out former national security advisor to both President Ford and President Bush, Brent Scowcroft, to help seal the deal. That guy is a real snake in the grass, listeners, Brent Scowcroft. But in the Unocal deal, CNOOC CEO Fu Qingyu has engaged no less than three U.S. investment banks, four law firms, two media communications groups, and some with direct connections to the White House. The investment banking firms presently on board. The investment company, The investment banking firms presently on board are J.P. Morgan, Chase & Company, and Goldman Sachs Group, and they're all part of the Federal Reserve System, listeners, to deal with political and policy hurdles. CNOOC hired lobbying law firm Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld, located in Dallas and well-connected to both Democrats and Republicans, and which represented Halliburton when Vice President Dick Cheney was chairman. Media firm Public Strategies Incorporated, a public relations company out of Austin, Texas, led President Bush's 2004 re-election media campaign. And its point person was Mark Palmer, former Enron Corporation Communications Director. The Brunswick Group, which specializes in mergers and acquisitions, will also oversee public affairs work. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan and Treasury Secretary John Snow appeared before a Senate committee just days before the announced CNOOC bid and conveniently made a comparison to Japan's U.S. investments of the 1980s. But the current Chinese agenda is actually quite different. Japan remains an ally of the U.S. Japan depended on the U.S. for help on defense with U.S. military bases throughout Japan, and was not a major competitor for rare resources or strategic assets which impact national security. In addition, China continues its practice of theft of American intellectual property, primarily in the entertainment sector, and patent violations with knockoffs of Dell computers and Nike clothing, for example, costing the U.S. more than $30 billion a year. And the loss of U.S. manufacturing to China for the sake of corporate desires to pay wages so low the U.S. cannot possibly compete with continues to eat away what is left of U.S. industrial base, thus leaving the U.S. with a ballooning trade deficit with China. It will ultimately be up to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., the CFIUS, an arm of the Treasury Department, which must scrutinize and review the CNOOC bid. Such has already been called for by several members of Congress, raising speculation as to how much of a surprise the bid was to lawmakers. According to a 1988 law, CFIUS has the power to stop a foreign country from such a takeover if evidence is found that such will threaten national security and that relevant laws do not have adequate authority in order to protect U.S. security. One such scenario could be the undersea oil drilling for oil prospecting that might help China's nuclear testing capabilities. Most CFIUS reviews take about 30 days. Yet the fear in Washington is that if CNOOC bid is not accepted, that China would then become closer to oil-producing Russia and Venezuela, in addition to the rogue states of Iran and Sudan. Oh, this is insane, isn't it? And, of course, U.S. interest in protecting Taiwan is at the forefront, as well as South Korea. The bigger China grows economically, its military prowess likewise grows. With technology manufacturing, along with outright ownership of U.S. and Western firms combined, with technological weaponry buildup, the missing component now remains energy in order for China's global power to continue to thrive. Perhaps finally the CNOOC offer will bring the matter of U.S. sovereignty back to the halls of Congress as well as in the boardroom, as the American economy and national security clearly appear to be interwoven. Symbolically, this bid and unprecedented deal could press the U.S. government to seriously measure its long-term consequences and is an opportunity to do the right thing rather than that which merely benefits Wall Street for a short-term gain. Diane M. Grassi is the author of this. Chinese bid for UniCal more than meets the eye, from MichiganNews.com. Very, very important information, listeners, to be concerned about. We are really in a messy situation today. It's all by design. Who's the designers of all this? And what difference does it make at this late time? They're untouchable. See, that is the problem. They are untouchable. On the anticommunistanalyst.com, distributism is an article that must be given your attention. Must be given your attention. You must spend time with this information. From the Washington Times, UPI, Iran plans to have the first unit of the Bishar nuclear plant online in 2005, said the plant's Russian constructor Wednesday. Quote, the start of the first power generating unit is possible next year, end quote, said Alexander Ramonstev, the head of the Russian Federal Atomic Energy Agency, or Rosatom. Quote, Bashir took a huge leap forward in the past year, and we virtually got back on schedule after a hiatus caused mainly by delays in the signing of the Russian-Iranian protocol on the return of nuclear waste to Russia, end quote. Construction on the Bashar plant was expected in the last year, he said, adding more differences, however, on whether Russian experts would construct additional units at the plant. Iran had told the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN nuclear watchdog, in 2003 that it wanted to construct 7 units. Rosatom head said Russia plans to supply approximately 100,000 tons of nuclear fuel to Iran under the strict control of the IAEA in late 2005, early 2006. The global world is getting smaller and smaller, people, in the connecting of the dots. 5 countries will participate in a deal between Turkey and Austria to construct a pipeline that would transport natural gas from Turkey to Austria. The deal was the latest in a series of agreements making Turkey an energy crossroad, said Turkish Energy Ministry Hamdi Güler Wednesday. There's much information about this global economy that's being implemented today on a regular basis. It's so unfortunate that we are involved in all this. And Agenda 21 is being slowly but surely implemented all over the world, but especially in this country. Smart growth, it's all in the Agenda 21 section. You're encouraged to go there and spend time to understand the big picture in place. Any phone calls, 559-781-3773, 559-781-3773.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Kaweah is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact The Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Back to the broadcast. Certainly, as we've talked before, the U.S. Senate, in a 54-45 vote, passed the Central American Free Trade Agreement. The agreement is intended to be a lifeline for the impoverished Central American countries, designed to help lift them out of poverty. In accordance with Chapter 3 of Agenda 21, the United Nations Blueprint for Sustainable Development, the measure now moves over to the House of Representatives, where a vote is expected this month. And now is the time to bombard your representatives directly. And I know some people think it's very negative to do that, very prohibitive to do that, but you must have your voice heard over and over again. So that Capitol switchboard number is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And indirectly by urging your state lawmaker to take your case to Washington lawmakers and represent you there. Meanwhile, in the House, the other creepy Congress critters passed a new-look resolution subjecting a Chinese oil company's bid to take over Unocal to presidential review, despite the threat that a CNOOC takeover of Unocal would be to the United States. The 398-15 vote simply asserts that if, quote, Unocal Corporation enters into an agreement of acquisition, merger, or takeover Unocal Corporation by the China National Offshore Oil Corporation, the president should initiate immediately through a review of the proposed acquisition, merger, or takeover, end quote. As the president urges for an expansion of trade agreements that have already devastated Americans, eliminated jobs, and undermined our national sovereignty, the U.S. House of Representatives is saying with their meaningless resolution that they trust Bush's judgment on the takeover. It has never been clearer that we have no friends in Washington. The executive, legislative, and judicial branches all work for the destruction of our national sovereignty, elimination of our individual liberty, and the annihilation of U.S. Constitution, which was intended to guarantee both sovereignty and liberty. As Woodrow Wilson stated, more traitorously placed his pen on the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, quote, we have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in civilized world. No longer a government of free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men. end quote. Wilson knew well the subject of which he spoke. He was the president who signed control of America over to the Federal Reserve, an extension of the International Monetary Fund, which is an arm of the United Nations. America is bankrupt according to federal law. The Treasury Secretary receives his salary from the IMF. If he draws his salary from the IMF, then for whom does he work? And that comes from Darren Weeks, listeners. And it's most appropriate at this day and time. It's just amazing how we've been manipulated and boondoggled for so long and maneuvered into these positions of prominence for the UN system, the world governmental system. And yet China and Russia have been allied for years. The Korean situation has been set up for years to percolate and then to explode or implode one way or the other. The Taiwan situation, another messed up thought in my mind. As Chiang Kai-shek wanted to take back communist, free China from communist China, but he did not get the weaponry the way he wanted it. And I think it was according to Ralph Epperson's information that the weapons had no firing pins in the guns. They could not be used. So keep it together in your thoughts, as the big picture in place is very, very amazing. China heeding Lenin, lectures on free markets. Boy, that should be interesting. China-Russia leaders seek to boost ties. Beijing devoted to weakening enemy, U.S. defector says. Obviously, the implication is traumatic. I go back to Hmong refugees lack shelter from the paper today. Soaked by rain, thousands of poor ethnic Hmong refugees from Laos were living without shelter in northern Thailand on Tuesday, forced from their homes under a Thai campaign to pressure them to return to their native land, which just succumbed under communism, listeners. They've been fighting communism, and we left that whole area, or region, if you want to use the UN lingo, in 1975. Actually, before that. But we had advisors and supplies, and I don't know what kind of supplies they received from us back then in the early 70s, but keep these thoughts in place when you try to do your research and try to understand what's being driven on us today. The head of a Chinese oil company that made an $18.5 million bid to buy Unocal, an oil company based in California, says U.S. critics of this potential deal should look closer to home for someone to blame. Quote, the Chinese people and government are learning from the United States. We are adopting the freestyle system very quickly, even though it's not perfect. End quote, China National Offshore Oil Corporation's President Fu Xingyu told the Los Angeles Times. He said his company, 70% of which is owned by the Chinese government, is using U.S. bankers and merger specialists to help him pull off the deal. That's got to have Vladimir Lenin rolling in his tomb. It was Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union and father of global communism, who once said capitalists would give communists the technological, material, and financial help they need to prevail in their ideological tug of war with the world democracies. Quote, to put it in other words, end quote, Lenin said, quote, they will work in the preparation of their own suicide, quote, end quote. In December, a Chinese company paid $1.75 billion to purchase IBM's personal computer business. Critics fear that if the deal goes through, China's communist government will use its acquisition of an IBM personal computer facility in North Carolina for industrial spying. And there's the point of bringing this up, listeners. Last month, another Chinese company offered $1.28 billion to buy Maytag, a 112-year-old appliance company based in Iowa. Also in June, CNOOC announced its bid for UNICAL. These offers come at a time when the United States has a whooping trade imbalance with China, which allows the communist government to amass billions of dollars in its coffers. Last year, the United States sent nearly $35 billion worth of exports to China, but received $197 billion worth of imports from China. Many Chinese companies are state-owned and operate under the protection and control of China's communist system. The Chinese government is also the world's second-largest buyer of U.S. Treasury bonds, the sales of which help the Bush administration cover its spending deficit. In other words, a large share of the mortgage on the debt created by this nation's huge budget deficit is in the hands of a government rooted in the teachings of Lenin. Though this reality doesn't seem to have set off alarm bells inside the Bush administration, it worries some congressional leaders. During a recent appearance on CNN's Lou Dobbs Tonight, House Energy Committee Chairman Joe Barton, Republican of Texas, said of the Chinese company's bid to buy UNICAL that, quote, it's in our strategic interest to let a front company for the communist Chinese purchase a strategic asset. End quote. Once again, it's not in our strategic interest to let a front company for the communist Chinese purchase of a strategic asset. But isn't this common sense, people? And isn't this something that we should all be extremely concerned about? I mean, there's so many things going on. Smart growth, sustainable development. And yet, our country's being bought out from under us because of an executive order signed by President George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992 during the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, Infrastructure Privatization 12803, Executive Order Number 12803, Infrastructure Privatization. Barton said his committee soon will hold hearings on the proposed deal, as well it should. Just as this country engaged in a commercial diplomacy with the Soviet Union, it should do so with China and the world's other remaining communist countries. The world's other remaining communist countries? You mean we're not a communist country? With the infrastructure that's been put into place? Heavy progressive income tax? Government control of schools? I mean, people. A central bank? World communism is alive and well, and it'd be here, buddy. Barton said his committee soon will hold hearings on the proposed deal. The United States entered the century as the world's dominant economy, but China, with its more than 1.3 billion people and cheap labor, is fast becoming a force to be reckoned with in the global economy. That it has achieved this distinction without shedding its communist system is an achievement the Soviet Union never managed. It is also good reason for the Bush administration and Congress to give close scrutiny to the attempts by Chinese companies to buy controlling interest in a U.S. companies. From the time when the ideological clash between democracy and communism seemed to hinge on the outcome of the nuclear-tipped standoff between this country and the Soviet Union, now it's clear the victory that came from that fall of the Iron Curtain and the dismantling of the Soviet Union was not the climax of this struggle. And this is by Dwayne Wickham from USA Today. And he doesn't have the picture in place either. Democracy is the code word for socialism slash communism. So this is why Nikki Rapana of the Anti-Communitarian League and Nordica spent so much time with the Hegelian dialectic, because this is what we live today, the Hegelian dialectic. And it's a sad commentary to have. It's a sad thought to have that we're being maneuvered and manipulated into this UN system formed, engineered by the Soviet Union, where the UN Charter is very, very similar to the Soviet Constitution at the time. Alger Hiss, a major creator of the UN Charter, a major part of the UN Charter, a Soviet spy, spent time in prison as being a Soviet spy. How many Soviet spies do we have in America today? Or Russian spies, if you will. But the Soviet Union never collapsed. That is my point and feeling. It only collapsed for our consumption. And certainly that should be everyone's concern. Everyone's concern. There is so much to be concerned about in America today that is it's beyond comprehension while that America isn't completely awake. Put it this way. Everybody dealing with their television and what's going on there to keep us diverted and divided. Here we see legend, not science, states that cards are easier to boil than frogs. That's crabs are easier to boil than frogs. Frogs, placed in a pot of hot water, jump out safely. Any cauldron of crabs, however, if one crab laboriously crawls up the pot wall from the hot water to the rim to escape, the other crabs snatch him back down as they all cook together. Frogs are individualists who save their skins and know their minds. Crabs are egalitarian communitarians. That is good for one is good for all. Most Americans are either frogs or crabs. Frogs cherish property, private property. That's right. Frogs cherish private property, their bodies, and demand personal responsibility for medical directions and medical decisions. Crabs cherish the state, its central control, and state medical decisions for everyone in the group. Crabs live like Hegel's philosophy that whatever is efficient is right. Crab world view. Crab means of analyzing reality, and crab ethics of action are the philosophical foundations of the United Nations Agenda 21, Chapter 6, and its sustainable medicine. Sustainable medicine is central to the concept of sustainable development of the world's land masses, air and water. Sustainable development esteems the planet's intrinsically valuable environment in that biodiverse environment human beings are a dangerous, capricious burden. In the Agenda 21 worldview, people, especially rich, intelligent people, consume way too much, and they make too many of themselves. Their effects must be curbed and their numbers reduced. Sustainable development is a private property land grab. That's right, sustainable development is a private property land grab. That in mind, always, listeners, sustainable development is a private property land grab. It is justified in the name of global equity. You see how all this is coming together? Communism on one side, communism on the other side. We don't understand it, but I do. I see it. Communism is alive and well everywhere, on both sides of the spectrum. Under a communist country, you cannot have private property ownership. And once again, sustainable development is justified in the name of global equity, overcoming economic disparities, and assuring global integrity of the environment. Sustainable medicine is a body grab. It is justified in the name of achieving global medical equity, overcoming health disparities, and assuring an enduring global environment free of too many people. Sustainable medicine makes decisions through visioning councils and determine what shall be done or not done to each body in its group in its native habitat. Sustainable medicine experts do not refer to citizens as sovereign nations, but as humans in their settlements. Now, you see how all this is coming together. This country is being depleted of its assets. Our industry is gone below the border and overseas. Jobs are being delivered overseas, meaning the relocation of people are going overseas in this country. The negotiating group on the movement of natural persons comes from the World Trade Organization of the UN system. So you see how all this is being engineered today, where we're going to have to capitulate to all chapters of Agenda 21 because we'll all be poor. We'll all be broke. With the crash of the stock market, if it happens, and it's bound to happen, to manipulate us into control. These people at the top want to reduce the population in the world. So sustainable medicine uses two classes of public access to affect the largest numbers of people worldwide most efficiently. The first class of actions attacks high technology products. The method is to create a public health crisis that forces government or industry to eliminate a valuable medical or surgical technology that, because of its expense, and inequitable distribution, makes it medically unsustainable. You see how it's going on? Our jobs are disappearing. Our ability to make a living for ourselves is disappearing more and more as time progresses. Agenda 21 is transplanting the constitutional republic that we thought we had, the free enterprise system that we thought we had, and at one time we did have a free enterprise system. Sustainable medicine, therefore, clamors to eliminate such important life-saving and life-extending medical devices as flexible polyvinyl chloride plastic tubings treated with methylates. During the past 50 years, flexible medical tubing has revolutionized breathing machines, intravenous medicating and blood transfusing, kidney dialysis, perinatal feeding, and neonatal medicine and surgery. Sustainable medicine's second class of public action attacks ideas of high technology scientific progress. The method is to revise people's expectations for health, for medical care, and for long life in harmony with the environment. Sustainable medicine devotees celebrate human death as natural, inevitable, and environmentally beneficial. Rather than a mere right to die, sustainable medicine inculcates a duty to die. Listeners, this, in my opinion, is why the public exposure of the Terry Schiavo disaster happened. Sustainable medicine is the pivot around which all other sustainable development revolves. Principle number one of the Rio Declaration on Environment and Development in 1992 states, get this, listeners, human beings are at the center of concerns for sustainable development. They are entitled to a healthy and productive life in harmony with nature. Few Americans know the meaning of sustainable medicine, or worse, the implications of healthy life in harmony with nature. However, an internet Google search for sustainable medicine yielded, in May 2005, a total of 5,850,000 English language references. Germans, English, Canadians, and Scandinavians under socialized medicine appreciate sustainable medicine, for they daily deal with its rationing, long waiting times for care, low technology, and emphasis on medical caring, not medical curing. Who decides what shall be done or not done to our body, whether healthy, diseased, injured, or fatally ill. Sustainable medicine uses identical protocols for human body ownership as sustainable development proposes for private land ownership. PV is a valuable acronym for remembering the basic concepts that animate sustainable medicine and sustainable development. PV, that's P-E-P-E-V-E, incorporates the infamous three E's of sustainable development: equity, economy, and environment. Sustainable medicine is guided by P equals precautionary principle. If any risk, stop. If evidence is inconclusive, stop absolutely. If no proof, stop anyway. The prudent, better safe than sorry, is perverted to safe sorrow for all. The pernicious precautionary principle destroys risk-benefit analysis. It hinders experiment and innovation. It impedes progress and requires reversion to simpler, more natural products. In land use, it requires removing invasive species and beneficial genetically manipulated seeds that could harm some plant, insect, or person. In medicine, the precautionary principle deprives courageous masses of people of necessary life-sustaining medication and equipment because of potential harm to a few. The precautionary principle propels its proponents beyond intellectual cowardice to anti-technology, anti-progress, ludet primitivum. In both land use and medicine, the precautionary principle almost always is paired with its craven corollary, the irreversibility principle. In landscape, the irreversibility principle requires that rather than mine a precious resource that once extracted its irreversibility, used, better save it than spend it on today's life-sustaining necessities, even if people will pay and legally own the resource. Fabulous stuff, people. Fabulous information by Dennis the Menace on AmericanExpose.com. Sustainable medicine plus sustainable development equals duty to die by Madeline Kossman on AmericanExpose.com. UN Agenda 21 and sustainable development. It's all in place. Everything's being maneuvered for a purpose and a problem and an outcome. Everywhere. All over the place. Get busy. Educate yourself and others now. Good night.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our